call from mom. Answer it. Call silence.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey everybody, my television show, Trip Flip, premieres Sunday night, March 17th at 8 p.m. 7 Central on Travel Channel. Set your DVRs, tell your friends, and as always, go to birdbirdbird.com.
This is the Birdcast.
All right, we're recording Yoshi.
Obayashi?
Yeah, oh, Yoshi's flying.
No, but how do you say your last name, Obayashi?
Obayashi, yeah.
I'm in a huge... Asian fascination right now. Like the entire Asian culture is doing what happened to do you remember when like the Latin fire happened in like 99 when Ricky Martin was like big?
Yeah.
It's happening with Asians right now.
I guess so, because I do one podcast called DVD ASA.
Just started listening to it because it's happening.
Yeah.
David
Cho.
See, like, I didn't even know who he was. I didn't know who. There was, like, I knew you.
Yeah.
That was it. But I knew you from having seen you at the Irvine Improv.
Yeah.
And then through, like, Norton or, like, Attell.
Attell, Norton, and Russell Peters.
Yep.
And you were nice enough to put me at the Schomburg Improv.
You came by. I was like, oh, I know. Yeah, of course. Up. That was the funniest, by the way. That was one of the funniest stories. Because for not that anyone listening to this knows exactly who you are. So, but for those of you who don't, Yoshi was a porn editor for a while before.
I got fired a year ago.
Is that just what's happening to the porn industry in general?
No, this is not something, you know, they made up bullshit reasons, but I had a problem with the general manager there.
Yeah.
And I got fired. But, you know, I don't mind getting fired, but it was just all kinds of bullshit they pulled. I talk about this on Ari Shaffir's thing, so I don't...
Don't worry about it.
I don't have to repeat, but it was a bad ending. I worked there for 9 years, and I did another 4 or 5 years in retail business. So I was at it for a long time, but I still kind of dabble in it. I helped Dave's old porn season 1 and 2.
Oh, really?
Consultant, whatever that means.
Yeah. And, but you know more than probably the average, even
oh,
the average
for
comic.
Sure. For
I
sure.
I sometimes have an argument with my wife. Like, she thinks that my knowledge of porn is not shared with the general population. And I was like, bullshit. I think it is. She goes, no, you live in a subculture where that's what you guys do. Like, you guys go on the road and you look at porn.
Yeah.
And you talk about porn. You make jokes about porn. And, you know, you email to each other. That's your subculture. But that's not shared with the general public. And I was like, bullshit. And then I was talking to some of the dads at school. And they're like, oh, I fucking know exactly who that is. Shut up. You fucking met her? And you're like, yeah, yeah. Savannah Sampson was the person I was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
I did a show with her back when Vivid used to do comedy nights.
Yeah, she did her first movie called American Angel in Paris with Rocco Siffredi for Evil Angel, the company I worked in. Basically, she asked her husband, her fantasy of her birthday, she wanted to have opportunity to fuck Rocco. And her husband's like a pretty lover. Okay, so she from Paris wrote a letter to Rocco and say, I want to have sex with you. She literally flew into his apartment and they just started fucking. And that's how her... career started.
And apparently it was like super aggressive.
She wasn't used to that.
Really?
She wasn't used to it. And I don't think Rocco's, he's very passionate. He loved women, but there's a lot of like rough sex,
yeah.
A lot of spitting, a lot of dragging women's heads in toilets and things like that. You know,
I've never shown up in the bedroom with me.
Yeah. It's just, but you know, I think his job is to expand people's imagination,
yeah.
Because when you watch porn, I guess, I don't know if it's a license, but, you know, like some people are into this kind of sex too. And
yeah.
I think it's really uncomfortable for people to talk about sex.
Yeah.
So I think guys try to show porn and say, you know, these are like other possibilities.
Yeah. This is the stuff I'm into. My wife has never even watched a porn. I pulled up Ginger Banks.
Lynn?
Ginger,
oh.
Is there a Ginger Banks maybe or Ginger Lynn? She has a Vine account.
Yeah.
And so I picked it up on today, and I showed my wife what her typical – I just was looking through Vine. That was Leanne's like, what's that? It's just her fingering herself. And Leanne was like, oh, my God, why would someone put that out there? And I was like, well, that's what she does for a living. But not to obviously get you off on a tangent of porn, but the point was
– yeah.
You came out, and you did a set. You killed, and then you were, like, very grateful. And you go, hey, you know, I have a box of – porns in the back, and if you want, you can give, they're just free, you can give them away with your DVDs and maybe sell more DVDs. And I was like, oh great, thanks. So you had like maybe 30 or something, and I said to him, guys, Yoshi's kind enough to, if you buy one of my DVDs, you get a free porn.
Yeah.
And I sold out of DVDs. I sold all my fucking DVDs. Right. And I gave everyone got a porn, and we had one porn left, and it was me and Tony Baldino, the owner of the club.
Yeah.
And we said, put it in, let's see what we just gave everybody. And it was I can tell you the scene, but and you'll know what movie it is. It's Belladonna.
Okay.
She's wearing a ski cap.
Okay.
And it's all girl on girl, and I think they're in a cabin, maybe.
Oh, what did they call it? Cabin fever? Or they went to Big Bear.
Yeah.
In a bus. Oh, that's a good one.
Well, there's a sex scene with Jenna Jane, or no, with Belladonna, who I was completely unfamiliar with. I didn't know. I'd never heard of Belladonna.
One of the greatest performer of all time.
Hands down, no questions asked. That woman has some fucking abilities. But this scene, she was hooking up with a woman, and she was it looked like she was rummaging through her pussy.
Yeah.
Like just fuck. Like she lost something and was looking for it, and it was so aggressive that Tony Baldino, like all of us were like, holy shit. Like this is some next level shit.
Yeah.
And Tony Baldino started laughing hysterically, and he goes, you just gave 30 people who like your comedy this video. They're going to put this in. I was like,
it's a, you know, the place I used to work, they sell some pretty hard stuff.
Really?
It's very, very good. But I'm so jaded. After a while, I just think it's normal.
Yeah.
And so the guy who work in the DVD department, we kind of put pressure on the directors, like, you need to bring your game up, you know, make it even more aggressive, because now I'm getting kind of used to these things, you know. So, but you know what's so strange, Bert? Because when we were a kid, we were around the same age, we watched porn. Now, comparing to what they're making now, it was tame. It's almost campy in a way, you know.
Yeah.
So the kids watching the stuff now, I wonder what kind of taste they'll have 15, 20, 30 years from now. It's going to get more aggressive, you know.
Oh, they're going to be like, when I have an orgasm, I like to punch a girl in the stomach to hear that noise. That, so I'm looking for something real, just like it's true. And I think I kind of dialed back. Not like I definitely have the regular porn appetite of a regular dude.
Yeah.
But one day I was like, shit, I think I broke my governor, because now like I was looking for, I was like, I was bored. I was clicking on porn. I was like, girl on girl, that's stupid. Girl on girl, really? What is this, 1989? Like, and so I just had to pull back almost entirely, because I was like, I want to be, this sounds really stupid. I want to be like turned on by myself. I want to be like, I would love to be able to be like, get, like all of a sudden just have, as opposed to it be like, it's Thursday on the road and I just got done doing radio. Well, this is when I jack off. And
right.
You know? So I kind of pulled back a tad bit. And I think having daughters definitely.
Well, I know this is very sensitive, but the big thing in the last 10 years with people with girlfriend experience, I noticed with the young kids, they want now porn star experience, right? So yeah. I don't know what's going to happen, because one of my friend's kid emailed me, and he basically said, I know what you do for a living. It put me in an awkward situation, because I don't want to talk with that kid right about it. But so now we're in a situation where I think some young girls feel like pressure to do something because boys watch porn, thinking, oh, that's what boys want. And the boys think, oh, that's how girls behave. You know where I'm coming from?
No,
like,
yeah. It's,
so like,
is.
I don't know what started what. But their attitude about sex is way different from mine, because when I was a young kid and when I look at naked girls, we didn't have internet. I literally have to go to local magazine store and a garbage can, see if there's any other porno stuff. But it's all this shit is available for them, and they're way too knowledgeable, yet they're not emotionally ready for that stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's the truth, and you know, it's kind of fucking crazy, because I start thinking, like, my daughter, and this is nothing even remotely close to that, but my daughter cracks her neck. She's 8 years old, and she goes crack, crack, and cracks her back. And I'm like, that's like a
Old person shit.
Yeah,
isn't it?
What the fuck are you doing? Like, where'd you get that from? She was like, oh, the kids at school do it. So the kids, it's like kids are growing up so quickly, especially in LA, where you're like, I mean, I know you hear those, it's almost campy, but those horrible stories of like Oprah, like the color wristband is what they do. Oral sex is this, and brown is anal. Like, how old were you when you lost your virginity?
Technically 15, I guess.
Technically?
Well, I was in Long Beach, and I was walking by, and this black girl say, hey, you want a blowjob for $20? And then I went back to my house because I never heard such a talk before. I didn't know you could buy sex, whatever. I'm so naive, right? So I ran back home. I had a sandwich bag full of the change, like 1965. I was like struggling for the last 35 cents.
Yeah.
So I got it. It's all change. I paid the girl. She might have been 15, 16, 17. It's hard to tell with black girl because their more body was developed. But she's probably within 1 or 2 or 3 years of me. So she started giving me a blowjob, and maybe almost a minute, her pimp boyfriend slash manager came and kicked me down on the floor, smudging through my pocket to see if there's more money. And that was pretty much the end of it. So
that was 15?
Yeah.
Why do you make me laugh so hard?
No, I'm not.
You know, no, but you know that like.
So is that a losing virginity right there?
Like, no, yeah, yeah. I think.
Yeah, she had it. I mean, I have to say, black ladies with those fat lips, I really love. I'm not saying racially. They're
not racially.
They're great.
Nothing ever comes out racist from you. Like when the way you talk makes me think that you're just being honest.
Yeah.
And these are the words that you came up with to say it. Like
you're fantastic.
You,
I mean, they're better than Asian girls.
I've never hooked up with either.
Okay.
I've never hooked up with any. Although I'm telling you, man, I'm obsessed with Asian culture. I'm obsessed with it right now. Not like just the tattoos and the but like with the food, but I'm talking like the development of a child whose parents are first generation.
Yeah.
I guess is it racist to use the word immigrant?
No, not at all.
But immigrant,
even it is, who cares? We're comedians,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, there's no fucking malice in this. But like I'm fascinated by what happens to the the Bobby Lees whose parents are from that country, or my buddy Tom, his mom, my buddy Tom's mom was. Did you ever read or hear the book Heaven and Earth by Oliver Stone? Made a movie of it.
I saw the movie. I didn't read
my buddy Tom, that's his mom.
So, you kidding me?
No, fucking, he's amazing. He's one of the most interesting dudes in the world.
Did you interview him for podcast?
No, I should call him and tell him to come over.
I want to meet that person.
I wonder if I can call him. I see if I have his number. Yeah, he's
and make sure he delivers some Chinese food too.
He's got he's like the best fucking cook. You'd be fucking. He'll blow your mind.
That is crazy story.
Yeah, his mom. I should fucking call him. Oh, I got his number right here. I'll call him.
So that was his mom.
Yeah, that was his mom, and his mom hangs out. His mom's over there right now. Like his mom's fucking fascinating.
Bert, you should interview them before.
I should interview him, but she's very matter of fact.
Yeah,
but they've kind of introduced me a lot to like a lot of things. Hey, Tom, what are you doing, Tom? What are you doing? Your what?
Hardware store.
Okay. Hey, if you want to come by, I'm doing a podcast with my buddy Yoshi, and he's Asian. You can come by. Stop by on your way here, and you can jump in. He's dying to meet you.
I've actually had a Suzanne.
What's that?
I'm
okay. Well, come by if you can. We're doing it now. All right.
Thanks.
Bye. So, yeah, his like his mom invited me over for Vietnamese food.
Yeah.
And it was, I was like, I was just coming over to pick up my sunglasses.
Yeah.
And I was like, Leanne was making dinner and I came over. And then all of a sudden she just like welcomes you in. And this is a woman who's gone through insane hardship.
Oh yeah. I saw that movie. Jesus.
Fucking kidnapped, tortured, sent back to a village, tortured by them, then sent and like just horrific. But my point is, Tom's a fascinating dude because he was the first generation of, okay, this is it. We need to assimilate.
Yeah.
It's my job to assimilate us. I got to pay the bills. I got to figure out I got to do this. I got to do that.
Yeah.
But the same thing happened with the guy I emailed you and I said, you introduced me to that guy, Eddie Wong.
Yeah.
And that guy's fucking fascinating.
Yeah.
And it's the same scenario. And you are even more so. You were born in
Japan.
Japan, but you're Chinese, right?
I'm ethnically Korean.
Ethnically Korean.
Yeah.
And born in Japan and then came over here.
1980.
In 1980? How old are you now?
I'm 43.
Okay, so you were like 13?
I was almost 10, 11, I guess.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and it was it was really weird circumstance because my parents got divorced. I didn't know about it.
Oh, I heard this story and you got kidnapped.
Yeah, she basically brought us over here.
Fuck.
And said, she said we were flying. My hometown is Osaka, which is kind of like Chicago slash Detroit of Japan. We got on a plane. She said we were flying into Tokyo, which is odd because trains probably faster.
Yeah.
Then I woke up next morning. We're in Hawaii. And basically my mom said, your dad and I are divorced. She brought us over here. And then from Hawaii, we went to Washington State, and I lived there for a while. But
and that would you met Joey, Brody, all those guys up there, right?
Yeah, in Seattle.
Doing stand-up.
Yeah. So, you know, that – but it's interesting you say that because I think Eddie and David Cho – well, the podcast I work on, DVDSA.
I listened to the very first one, then bits and pieces of the other one. I'm fascinated also. I'm one of the not to jump all over the map, but like one of the other things is the acceptance that that it seems that every Asian dude I know of has with porn, in that it is not culturally frowned upon. It's not culturally frowned upon, but it's like all you guys seem to be very comfortable being not only good friends with, but it seems like dating porn stars and hanging out with them. And whereas like some white comics will be more like, yeah, they'll hang out with them, but they kind of keep their distance. But it seems like it's really kind of, you know, the same stroke of the knife.
In Japan, they don't have that kind of stigma at all. I think partly because it's not a Christian nation, and it's also we didn't have to deal with Sigmund Freud's psychoanalysis. We don't really deal with problem that way.
Yeah.
And we're also not guilt-driven society. It's a shame-driven society.
Yeah.
So there's not like Jim Norton used to tell whenever we talk, he think we have a horrible porn in Japan. First of all, I don't think it's a horrible porn. I think they're innovative porn, but they're a rear. But
it's a lot of
crazy stuff.
No,
sure.
But a lot of the Japanese porn, it's always some girl groaning like crazy. Like, oh.
It's very rapey.
Yeah, it's like...
Because Japanese men are into rape.
Really?
I mean, they have a cartoon called Rape Man. And basically... the cartoon's ridiculous because... cartoon's ridiculous because you could never pull that stuff. But it's basically a rape man see a guy getting dumped by a girl and she's being really cunty.
Yeah.
So he will break into her house, middle of the night, rape her, make her realize she's being a bitch. At the end of it, she said, thank you, rape man. You made me realize I'm a horrible person.
That is such a ludicrous.
You can't pull that shit over here. But people read it in Subway and then like a comic book form, and women would sit next to it, a guy reading a Wake Man comic book right next to her.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So what – now, okay, so wait. Go back to about the immigrant.
Oh, so – but you know the people that you meet are they're a combination of very exceptional and / scumbag version of all the Asian people that I know. Because even that DVDSA, I work with Asakura, who happened to be the performer of the year this year in porn. You know, she beat all the other performers, all races, to be number one anal queen.
Yeah.
Then you have David Cho, now considered one of the highest, if not the highest paid artist in the world because of that Facebook deal that he made, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. It's a New York Times article last year.
What was the Facebook deal?
Well,
I don't know anything. All I know is that he did the bucktooth whale.
Yeah, that's his signature thing.
Yeah.
He did an art thing down here in LA like 10 years ago, and some guy who owns a beauty salon place in San Jose asked him to go up there. He went up there. He met this girl who became his girlfriend for a long time, so he ended up moving to San Jose. And somebody saw his artwork, I think, and had something to do with Sean Parker, one of the creators of Facebook. Yeah. And I think that's what happened. I could be wrong, but basically Sean Parker, who was played by Justin Timberlake in Social Network, asked him to do artwork for him. At first at Napster and Plexico or something like that.
Yeah.
Eventually, when he started Facebook with Mark Zuckerberg, he asked Dave to do it. So their first office, Dave did all sorts of graffiti stuff for them. He hated Facebook. He thought it was a stupid idea.
Yeah.
He thought it was going to be all MySpace. Because, you know, people forget 7, 8, 9 years ago, MySpace was king.
Oh, yeah.
So he finished. They offer him, I think, 60,000 cash or something, or shares in Facebook. And
are you fucking kidding me?
No. I mean, now everybody thinks that's obvious, but it's obvious now. It wasn't obvious at the time. And they're offering $60,000. That's a lot of money.
It's a dickload of money.
Yeah. And he told me he didn't give a shit about Facebook. He thinks it's stupid. But he put money in because he bet money on Mark Zuckerberg and Sean Parker because it was even obvious to him, even though without any sort of computer background, these two guys are geniuses.
Yeah.
And you always put money on talent and genius people over anything else. So he did it. And I don't know how much it's worth, but New York Times last year said between at least $200 million or something like that.
So David is rich?
Yes. Well, he was already rich before the Facebook. He was making millions from gambling and millions from artwork.
Gambling, like poker?
I don't know what he plays, but when I first met him 7 years ago, I went to this kind of really rough place where all the Salvadorian people live, like a gangster infested area.
Yeah.
I hardly know the guy. He invited me. I walk in. He shaved his head. He's bleeding from his wrist because he has that breakdown. He knifed a cross on both of his wrists. He's bleeding. Mind you, I've never met him before. He shaved his head, so he doesn't look like himself. He's bleeding from his wrist. He invited me to meet his friend, Harry Kim, who did his documentary. And there's about $60,000 to $70,000 in cash in the middle of the room. Crispy $100 bills. Because they just went to Vegas, want that money. And he told me to just sit down and wait for the meal. And they just left. You know, Dave's in the other room and two other people in the backyard barbecuing stuff. And they just met me, you know.
Yeah.
There's all this cash. I could run away. It was just so strange, right? I asked him maybe a couple months later, maybe a year. I don't know when I asked him, don't you think it's strange? Like, you would just invite somebody with that kind of cash?
Yeah.
You don't really know me, you know? He basically said, well, if you took it, you took it. I wouldn't make a big deal out of it. So, is that weird?
It's really fucking weird.
And I didn't take the money because growing up in Japan in a neighborhood full of yakuzas,
yeah,
I've seen this thing where sometimes they overpay you, see if you're honest enough to pay back or not, and if you don't, they beat the shit out of you. I remember seeing shit like that growing up.
Yeah.
So I never fuck with other people's money, you know?
It's so funny that you would go growing up with yakuza. Like, that is insane.
I mean, technically, Koreans, we live in a bad neighborhood, and you only see people like that.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it about you that you get into, like, so you're friends with, arguably, probably three of the greatest comics working. You work with them, Russell, Jim, Dave Attell.
Yeah.
You're friends with, those are your friends.
Yeah.
You're friends with probably any big porn star that's ever probably
Well, worked. I'm friends with you and Joe Rogan.
Rogan loves
all
you.
Those guys are down to earth guys.
Yeah, but what is it about you that, like, I can tell you what draws me to you.
Yeah.
Like what something about you I find absolutely fascinating because you have a very matter of fact sensibility. So you don't really try to
It hasn't been always easy for me. This is like it took years to do that because growing up in Japan, you're not supposed to express any opinions. You're not supposed to stick out. There's a saying in Japan. It's called the nail that stick out must be hammered in. So for Japan to have stability and peace, everybody have to, whatever the personal need they have, hold it in and think about the needs of everyone.
God damn it. That's so un-American.
But you pay a lot of price when you do that, though, because you suppress individuality and creativities and things like that. There are advantage and disadvantage, but I still prefer America over Japan. But there's times I'm amazed. Like, March 11, 2011, when the tsunami thing hit Japan, there was lines and people never cut. And even people who are injured always told everyone else to please take care of others first, you know. And David Cho said, as a Korean person, that shit would never happen in Korea and in China. And I think there's a social contract among Japanese, like, we will do everything by the group, you know. So there is some benefit to that.
That's a fucking – I would love that. I live on a street that's one way.
Yeah.
And you can't take a left off of the main street onto my street and then go all the way through you. One way, there's a block off. And everyone fucking cuts through. And I see them do that.
Yeah.
And we're right where the thing is, and I'm constantly fucking angry at cheaters. Like, yeah. You know when you drive up Laurel Canyon?
Yeah.
And it's like the far right lane is a turn right onto Mulholland.
Yeah.
And then the other lane is go straight over.
Yeah.
And you see fuckers drive up that right and then cut over at the last minute. Yeah. There's a bus that did it.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're a fucking state employee. You don't have to be anywhere quick.
Yeah.
Why are you cutting the line?
Yeah.
You should lead by example. I almost vined the license plate of that bus and called him a cheater, but I couldn't get on my phone cord.
Yeah.
But that is pretty fucking awesome about Japanese culture.
Yeah. But when you do not fit into the group, that's when there's a lot of problems. There's this thing called ichime, which is like, I don't know how to explain in Japanese, but English, but it's basically a social problem in Japan.
Explain it in Japanese and I'll see if I can understand it. I'm joking.
No. Because I had to deal with this when I was a kid. So any kid that stick out and doesn't fit in, the group feel like they have an obligation to make that person fit in, and usually by beating that kid and verbally abuse them.
Bullying.
Yeah, but on steroids. Because oftentimes if the kid never learned to adapt, oftentimes they kill themselves. This is very common in Japan. So I got picked on because I'm ethnically Korean, so I would do something a little different from them.
Yeah.
So they could catch up to that, and I'm really tall. Yeah. I literally stick out from the rest of the group.
You're like, what, 6'2"?
6'1". Yeah. And I remember one time, there's a school assembly. All the kids from first or sixth grade were put in the middle of the field, and every Friday the principal would talk to everyone and say, this is the kind of things you need to do. Think about this and that, right? So this is like mid-70s. So the teacher asked, what is the biggest concern for Japan that we need to face? Nobody raised their hands. It might have been 400 kids in field. I don't know why I did it. I raised my fucking hands and said, I think we should be worried about oil crisis of Japan, right? I'm like second grade. I don't know why. Where'd that come from? Right? I got my ass kicked every day since then.
An idea, people. They're beating you up, and you're just like, it was an idea. Shouldn't we have raised our hands?
Yeah.
That's so fucking.
So they think you've been better than them. So I got beat up. Like, you know how many Japanese kids study in the States? They learn to speak English.
Yeah.
They go back to Japan. They, on purpose, speak really bad in front of his friend in English because they don't want him to think he's better than them.
Really?
When you reach exceptional level, they give you a hard time. See, people say all the great things about Japan.
Yeah.
It's like if I brought people from overseas and took all the wonderful places, never showed them all the horrible things of America. Because I love America, but it's not a perfect place. There's some horrible. Yeah. But if I only show them all the good things, it's wonderful. But if I only show you clips of America where people going to school and start shooting people and racism.
If you just went to America and then looked at World Star Hip Hop, you'd be like, fuck. Are you serious? Like, I know what you're saying.
So only thing people see is all the good things of Japan. Oddly enough, I did this podcast, my podcast, and my friend was visiting. He got in big trouble recently because he released this video YouTube clip called Is There Racism in Japan? And believe me, there is. There is discrimination. They're threatening him right now. The nationalists, you know, anyone who crazy fascist pro-Japanese, and the bloggers that attacking him, you know.
Yeah.
He's Japanese-American, taught English, and he did this clip, and he released it. And he got even interviewed by Washington Post and my friend Mickey. And he didn't go back to Japan recently because he knows that it might not be a good thing. And there's a lot of good Japanese people who care about their Japan.
Yeah.
They just don't want to stick out and say, I agree with them. They're just afraid.
Yeah.
When people are afraid to talk about it, the bad people think there's no problem in Japan. Believe me, Japan's not it's a wonderful place. It's a great country, but there's a lot of problems, you know. They really have a lot of problems, and they don't like people like me speaking out. And that's the thing with Asian Americans. A lot of people don't want to speak up.
Then what's the thing that creates, and I only use you three as examples.
Yeah.
Because you three have been in my conscious this last, like, 3 weeks.
Eddie is somebody I met recently, and he's great. Good for him because I love seeing – this is like a second generation of kids coming up, and I don't care what they do. I just want them to speak out because I think a lot of Asian kids are just afraid to try something different because the pressure the parents put on them. And I think that's really irresponsible on their parents.
Yeah.
I really do because Asians have a reputation supposedly being the hard workers. I think that's all bullshit for this one reason. Asian people, especially the old school generation, work really hard because they don't want to deal with their personal problem, you see?
Okay.
See? Like, they want to control, they try to guilt the kids and say, look at all the shit I'm doing for you. But in reality, they don't want to live the life that they should be living. They want to put that responsibility on their kids. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So they don't want to deal with their problems. So it's a very convenient thing. They just work really hard. My family's, you know, I don't talk to a lot of my family. My brother's kind of was mad for the last couple of years because I have a big mouth. But I think, I wouldn't say I'm a pioneer, but more fucked up things I do, it gave comfort to other Asian Americans not being embarrassed, you know?
Well, that is the cool thing is that, like, it seems like, you know, you guys and then another one of my buddies, I would say a good friend, our daughters are best friends.
Mm-hmm.
What our best friends are at eight years old. There's a guy named Roy Choi who mm-hmm. does Kogi taco trucks.
Oh, Dave and Eddie knows him.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. And, but it's so interesting because he's straight up first generation, like
yeah.
his parents. And he's massively driven, but he's extremely individualistic. Like he's
yeah.
completely at his own dude. And he was corporate. Working
sure.
for anyone that doesn't is now like, who the fuck are you talking about? Roy Choi is the guy who revolutionized Los Angeles cuisine as we know it as Los Angelinos.
Yes.
He started the first taco truck that was not Mexican.
It was like taco / Korean cuisine combined.
Korean barbecue taco trucks. He was the first person. He lived next door to me or across the hall from me in LA for when we had babies. Up until we moved into this house.
Wow.
Yeah, and he was working at Rock Sugar as the executive chef. He had been the executive chef in Sacramento for like the Hilton or whatever.
Yeah.
And he had worked his way up and he was like done. He was tapped out and he was like, I feel like I'm not being me or whatever the fuck. I'm not going to put words in his mouth. But he felt like he wasn't being himself and he decided to invest in Kogi to Korean taco trucks. And it is now that when you see taco trucks and you're like, what? Two hot girls barbecue and that's on the taco truck. You can thank Roy Choi.
Yeah.
That was his idea.
That's he's definitely a
pioneer.
Innovator.
He's
pioneer,
a pioneer
for sure.
And you want to hear something even worse? He told me about that idea Thanksgiving, like the Thanksgiving before he did it. He told me about it and I literally was like, that's a horrible idea. I was like, that's the worst idea ever, Roy.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You have a daughter. Keep your job at Rock Sugar. You know? Look, maybe now he's fucking. I mean, he's huge. I went into a meeting at UTA the other day, and they used him as an example. And
yeah.
I go, hold on. You're talking about my Roy Choi, the guy I know?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, he's fucking
huge.
But he changed and went 180, and I watched him open up, and he started getting tattoos, and he started dressing more comfortable, and it was like all of a sudden this financial freedom or this creative freedom really made him like blow up in so many other ways. And now I look and I'm like, the white kids seem to go into like one of four paths.
Mm-hmm.
You're either a hippie, you're like a bully, you're like alternative, or you go off and you love black culture
mm-hmm.
and you're like Eminem.
Yeah.
So it's like it's white kids aren't really expressing themselves the way it seems to me that the Asian culture is expressing themselves these days.
It was really hard for Asian American because they were always afraid. I think there was a bit of
just checking to make sure we're still recording. I always worry about that shit. So what were you saying?
I think historically, I think Asian Americans were kind of scared to try different things and stick out. Not just Japanese, but Chinese and Korean people. Because of a lot of the misunderstanding last 100 years, we had problems since, you know, Spanish American War in the Philippines and World War II with Japan and Korean War and Vietnam War. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding.
I think
we need to do a better job. I think we are all at times looks and act exotic. I think we do a better job of like open up to people, but I think non-Asian people should be more tolerant and try to learn Asian things too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, you know, here's mm-hmm. the big – I actually got into this conversation last night with someone because, it's like I said, it's on the top of my – it is where my head's at these days.
Yeah.
And it's – you know, I used to have a joke about this, and it's a joke, but it's very honest. I knew one Asian person my whole life growing up. Two, maybe. Pete Curry and this guy Sam Ho. Was it?
Where did you grow up? Florida?
Tampa, yeah.
Okay.
We didn't have any Asian people.
My friend Mickey, getting all this trouble in Japan.
Yeah.
He was the only Japanese kid, I think, down in Florida. I don't know where in Florida, but yeah, he said it was strange growing up in Florida as an Asian person.
There's no Asian people. There are none. And it's like, and so I knew nothing. I knew absolutely nothing. Moved to New York. And even in New York, I would say New York was still fairly... New York's not as integrated as Los Angeles. There was Chinatown, and that was it. Like in New York, and you could go down to Chinatown, and you saw Asian people, but it wasn't like I just didn't seem like integrated the way that LA was. Because now in LA, it's like all our friends.
Yeah,
there's someone's Asian.
Yeah,
like it's I told before I get to the story, but the joke I had, which is kind of hacky, but not hacky at all. But not super proud of it now that I'm 40. And
yeah,
My daughter was enrolled in a school before this one she's at now that was like 98% Korean. It was in Koreatown in LA. And so we completely got immersed in that culture.
Right.
Like fucking, I was making kimchi omelets every morning.
Kimchi omelet.
Yeah, well, that was because Roy.
Even I wouldn't touch that.
Roy got me into kimchi bad. And so I put kimchi in everything.
Yeah.
I fucking put kimchi in everything. So, but, I always thought Koreans were extremely fashionable. Like, really, like, the Korean women were at the school used to come fucking dressed.
Yeah.
No one wore sweatpants. Everyone looked hot as shit. Like, knee high boots.
Well,
like,
we don't have asses, so I don't think sweatpants would work for us.
But the joke I was saying is when I first moved out to LA, I didn't know this. And I learned this. Sometimes I tell on the stage differently, whatever the crowd is. But the truth is, I learned this with Dr. Ken. Do you know Dr. Ken?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I haven't seen him in a while, but yeah.
Ken Jeong is, you know him as the guy from The Hangover. If you don't, that he's
very funny stand-up comic
and
a doctor.
Stand-up comic, doctor, and tremendously successful actor.
And a very sweet person.
And the nicest
Nothing like his character.
Guy. The nicest, most reserved, sweetest dude in the world. And me and him were opening up together at Ontario. And there was a long hallway where they were allowing people in and out of. That's where people were exiting.
Yeah.
And Ken and I were standing in the hallway as people were exiting. And this is completely racist, but this is exactly what happened. Two older Asian people were trying to walk back down the hall.
Yeah.
And so I assume they were Ken's parents.
Yes.
And they're arguing with one of the black bouncers in Asian. And I said, Ken, I think your parents are trying to come back to see you. He goes, excuse me? I go, I'm pretty sure your parents are coming back to see you. So he looks around the corner and he goes, those are my fucking parents. And I go, really? He goes, Bert, they're not even Korean. And I went, what? And he goes, they're Japanese. And he goes, what the fuck do you not know they're Japanese? And I said to him, I go, it's not like they're wearing Rising Sun bandanas. How the fuck am I supposed to know? And he goes, they're not even saying, they're fucking screaming in Japanese. And I go, well, what are they saying? And he goes, he goes, I don't know. I go, what do you mean? And he goes, I don't know. And I go, well, kind of, like, what are they saying? Like, do you understand some of the words? He goes, I don't understand any of the fucking words because it's a totally different language. And I was like,
I wish I was there.
Oh, I was like, what do you mean it's a different language? He was like, Japanese and Korean, you can't understand, it's different languages. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. I go, like, none of the words? And he goes, none of them. So I went on stage at night, and the joke I told was, was, did you know that Japanese people cannot understand Chinese people at all? And fucking half of the crowd was like, shut the fuck up. And then I'm like, I know. I thought it was a little bit like a pantalone. Or like New York and Boston, like, hey, pack ahead, go fuck yourself. Like, and so I was blown away. And from that day, I was like, wow, I'm gonna just start asking questions.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, you know, it's like now what has happened to me is I took Leanne to go have pho Leanne's my wife. And I took her to go have pho.
But did she like it?
Here's what happened. So Tom hopefully comes over. You'll love Tom. He looks like Al Madrigal. He looks like an Asian Al Madrigal.
What?
I know. I introduced him to Al, and I go, you guys are like twins. And Al goes, because we're brown. And I go, you're brown. He's not brown. And so, but Tom, but I think he looks like Al Madrigal. But so Tom, like, you go to their house and they cook. She is Chinese, but grew up in Vietnam, his wife, mm-hmm. and Tom is straight up Vietnamese.
Right.
But their kitchen is like, it's all super, like, they shop at the Asian market.
Right.
They like, they're still very much, like, you go to their house and they made some rice soup that's like comfort food for when you're sick as a kid.
Right, right.
And they made that for me and Leanne because we were hungover. And Leanne and I were like so nervous. We're like, what do we, like, there's bones in it. What do we, like, it was, but then, and then Tom goes everywhere to eat. So I was like, the other day, Leanne and I are at Costco and I go, fuck it. Let's get adventurous. Leanne's a redneck. I mean, she grew up in a town of 1,200 people on our marriage license in her hometown. The third question was, are you blood relatives? I swear to God.
Wait, where is it? Where
is
she from?
Bowdoin, Georgia.
Okay.
A really small town in Georgia. And it's, I mean, she's straight up redneck. So I said to her, we got out of Costco. I go, let's go have pho. And she goes, I don't even know what that is.
Right.
I go, it's a Vietnamese soup. It's really fucking good.
Right.
She goes, well, I watched her shut down.
Yeah.
I watched her panic. Like,
in her defense, if I grew up in that situation, I'll be freaked out by Asian food too.
Yeah.
You know, but, the key is you probably don't want to show that front of your kids because your kids are not only going to compete with other white kids, but kids from Asia too.
Yeah.
You know, you want to prepare them. So you want to minimize that as parents, but I don't think she need to like them, but you want to open all possibility for your kids.
Yes. So I told her, I said, it's just me and her. And I go, I go, let's go get it. I go, just Yelp a pho restaurant. She goes, there's a great one. It's like pho 911 or it's right up here. It's a very popular one by a big Vietnamese restaurant.
Okay.
Supermarket. So we go in and I'm excited because I love it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I know exactly what I want.
Yeah.
And the menu's fucking huge. And it's like nothing makes sense. Food pho tom pho.
Yeah.
And then it's all numbers.
Yeah.
And it's like tripe and fatty and flank and it's real confusing. And I'm like, ooh, I want to get in the end. I watch her shut down and she's nervous and she's angry at me for taking her.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't know what to order and she doesn't know what she's going to like.
Yeah.
And she's afraid she won't like it. And I can see her melting down. Oh, fuck. So.
But eventually you guys order.
So then I go, look. She goes, slow down. And I go, listen, calm down. This is meant to be fun.
Yeah.
Like this is. We're going to have a good time. We're going to enjoy this.
Yeah.
And I said, I will get you. I will make sure. So the guy comes over and I very candidly take the – I go, listen, I really don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Right.
And I go, she has never had pho ever in her life. Can you help her with what she wants? And the guy goes, sure. What do you – like, tell me what you want. And she kind of says – and then he walks her through it. We order. He shows her how to make it.
Yeah.
And she loved it.
Yeah.
She was like fucking through the roof. She got in the car charged like she was a brand new person.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's what – the majority of Americans don't eat ethnic food because they're afraid they're going to – like how recently until like salsa took over as the number one condiment, now everyone loves Mexican food. And that's what we call – that Mexican food is pretty much American food these days.
Yes.
I mean, so it's like a lot of people are terrified to have different cultures' food because they don't know what to order.
I mean, I'm shocked coming here first time to visit the United States in 1979. And the reaction I heard from others about sushi, they were just grossed out.
Yeah.
And like now, it's I can't even believe that was an issue even back then because it's such a like. If you're in show business, you go on Ventura Boulevard. There's just so many sushi places that people go there for business meetings now. You know,
sushi's LA's healthy lunch. I mean, sushi is. Leanne doesn't eat sushi either,
mm-hmm.
but because she's a redneck and they burn their meat like that's how like she doesn't now.
Yeah.
Now she'll go and she'll have sashimi. She says she doesn't. It creeps her out with the rice and seaweed.
Yeah, yeah.
She doesn't like seaweed, but like the whole thing.
How about your kids?
My kids fucking love it.
Yeah,
my daughter Georgia was so proud. She had sushi one time with me, and she was like, "Daddy, can we tell Isla I had sushi?"
Yeah,
this is Isla. Isla's a flirt. She's coming back to see what we're doing.
So that's great because then your kids will become even more cosmopolitan than you two could ever imagine, you know? And that's what I love about LA. I just like the collision of different cultures, you know?
Yeah.
That's why I love traveling overseas because I never have fear of going anywhere.
But you were telling me right before we started, I was like, you're like, I'm going to Afghanistan. I was like, what for? And you're like, vacation.
Yeah. I have friends there. So I went last September for like 8-9 days. So I flew into Dubai, met a couple of my friends there, first time there. And,
are these all people you know through Russell too?
These I met through Jim Norton's manager, Jonathan Branstein. And this
that's George. George is a flirt too.
Jonathan Brandt is Jim Norton's manager, formerly, you know, Patrice O'Neill's manager.
Did you know Patrice?
I mean, very well. Well, pretty good. Yeah. And very sad. He passed away. And the last time I saw him, we got in a big argument. And,
oh, he's serious?
Yeah, he was telling me for 2 hours how much he hated Asian people. And after 2 hours, like, I hate the Asian people now too, you know, because it's so funny and persuasive.
The last time, one time we were working together, and this is a long time ago in Scotland, and I was leaving, so I was going to start a TV show. And I was like, Patrice, man, I'm glad we hung out, because, you know, it's like cool that we're friends now. And he's like, I'm not your friend.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I was like, I'm getting on a plane tomorrow. You can't say that. And he's like, I'm not your friend. And I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, we're not friends. Like, you think I can spend the night at your parents' house? I'm just imagine Patrice spend the night at my parents' house. I'm like, no, you can't. He's like, we're not friends. We're people who work together and know each other and don't mind working with each other. We're not like buddies. And I was like, but that was him. He was confrontational.
Confrontational because this is the reason why it's so different from Japanese. Japanese are non-confrontational, but I do respect black people for it because they're so honest. Even at a point like, it's very uncomfortable, but they're so, black people are very honest.
Yeah, honest. Black women are the most honest fucking type of human in the world.
And I think only way you could really get truth a lot of time in life is being confrontational because truth is very uncomfortable. That's why people get upset at comedians because we say things that are like obviously true, but people don't talk about it.
Yeah.
And then they get mad at you, but that Patrice was one of the most honest person.
Makes me want to go back and watch that Wu-Tang Clan tour through Asia. Because these are the fucking nine of the most confrontational men that have been fucking...
But those guys who respect Asian like martial arts stuff too. You know?
Yeah, they love it. Did you see the RZA has a new movie, The Man with the Iron Fist?
I didn't see it, but he was over at the warehouse where I do my DVD because he and David Cho did artwork.
Really?
Yeah. So, yeah, we get interesting people there.
I need to fucking research more David Cho. This guy's fucking
great. I have a love-hate relationship with him because I'm a lot older than him, and I don't like him. I don't know. I guess I'm kind of conservative. I don't like any younger Asian person talking back to me. even though they're telling me the truth.
Yeah.
So I told him, like, I got mad at him one time. I told him, like, I wish we get in a car accident. We both die. But I just want to make sure I live 5 seconds longer than him. So I know he died before me. You know, it was like, but Dave is a genius. I'm not kidding. I mean, because everything he touched, he turned it into gold, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm just stunned by a kid like that. So it's not surprising him, Asakura.
How old is he?
34, 35.
Okay, I can take that.
Dave, Asakura, porn star, Eddie, I can't say his last name, which is funny.
Juan.
I mean, Juan, and like your friend,
Roy.
They all know each other, and it's because they really are pioneers. They're really changing, you know, because.
But there aren't that many white kids doing it. Like, it seems.
But
like
you guys done enough in past, you know what
so
I mean?
So it's time for us just to ride the coattails. And enjoy the culture.
No, I think it's really hard for white kids to say I'm proud of being who I am because
it sounds racist.
Yeah, but they should be proud if you do something.
Yeah,
which on your own, you should be proud of something of your ethnic background because people in the past accomplished. You know, that's not a good proud in yourself. You got to do whatever you did on your own. You know, but I think white kids get bad rap. I really do.
I think there's a lot of well-intentioned white kids, and sometimes they try to connect. And
because I don't even like calling myself Asian American. I don't like the hyphenated shit, you know, because I think that's the next phase of America I have to change. You or a Patrice, whatever the difference we might have, like Patrice loved football, and that's one big thing that I could connect with him more than some Asian kid in Asia doesn't know anything about NFL, you know.
Yeah.
So. That's what I want America to go next. Just call ourselves America and none of that hyphenated shit.
What was worse? The bullying you got in Japan or when you first got to America?
Oh, in Japan for sure.
Really?
The kids, they don't even know what they're doing over here when it comes to that. The Japanese take it to another level.
Really?
It's very physically and emotionally cruel.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I ended it because when I was walking home crying again because I got beat up again, second grade or something. The Yakuza guys, I'm getting tired of you hearing crying all the time. Unless you do something about it, I'm going to kill you. Some grown-ass man said that to me when I was a kid. And it terrified me because the way he said it, it's almost like a growl of an animal. Because the Yakuza, I mean, there's a pretty good percentage of a sociopath, you know. So my choice was either I do something about it and not cry, or this guy was literally going to kill me. So I got an umbrella and I put a bunch of heavy metal pieces inside, taped it up, I had it with me. I think within a day or two when I went to school, I got chased out by kids again. And the Yakuza guy said, you can't beat up four or five kids, but you just have to beat one kid really bad enough, it'll stop. It's true. I beat that kid up so bad that put him in the hospital.
Really?
And then it stopped. It never happened again.
Really?
But like, why do I have to resort to violence to stop it?
You know? Why wouldn't there a parent step
in? They won't get involved.
Really?
These are the weird things that I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, Japanese are most polite. Even their language is very polite. Like, sumimasen is I'm sorry. So if you bump into somebody, you say sumimasen. If you want to ask for a glass of water from a waitress, you say sumimasen.
So
it's sorry, but this is where the Chinese and Korean and Vietnamese people get mad. Like, how come when Japanese rape of Nanking, where the whole city of Nanking was literally raped by Japanese army, the women were raped and murdered, why can't they say sorry to that? Like, you could bump into somebody, you could say sorry, but you can't apologize for massive rape and genocide?
No, you can't, yeah.
It's really weird.
It's so interesting, too, because Korean is such a – and this – I don't mean this racist. I'm just telling you what I heard. Korean is a very rude language. And, like,
it's louder than Japanese.
Yeah. Rude's the wrong one. It's very – rude's the wrong word. It's very, like – confrontational. Like, we went to eat with Roy and his wife, my wife and I. We went to a Korean barbecue. And Korean barbecue in Koreatown, where they had to order in Korean. No one spoke English. There weren't even white people in there. We were the only white people in there. And I don't want to do this. I do not want to do the stereotypical. I won't. I'll just say this is what it sounded like.
It was just loud.
This is what it sounded like. When she came up to order and she'd be like, this is what she sounded like. What the fuck do you guys want? And he'd be like, fuck you, bitch. Go get some fucking food now. And then she'd walk away, and he'd go, it should be here in a second.
And you know what's funny? Especially in Chinese, it's a very tonal. Like, when you say ma, it could mean, like, 8 to 9 different meaning. Even I can't tell, like, one means cow, one means, you know. So with those languages, it's louder. So it's really strange because, to me, if I didn't speak the language, you're 100% accurate because it's so loud.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's confrontational.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's like, hey, may I help you? You know, I hope you're having a good day. They're saying like that, but just like fucking loud. Whereas Japanese, it's lower and polite. But anyone who studied history in the last 100 years, Japan has committed. I do a joke where Japanese are the Nazis of Asia.
Yeah.
Because what they did during World War II.
Uh-huh.
Because they fucking hate the Jews. Now, it's a joke, but. But, I mean, and wherever they go, Asian people are upset with Japanese. And I think it's not young people, because young people love Japanese anime and shit like that, you know.
Yeah.
But I think if you don't acknowledge what you did in the past and apologize for it, then people are going to be angry because, one, they're hurt, and two, they're worried they might do that shit again.
Yeah.
America, you know, even with our racial problem, we did a wonderful job talking about it, you know. Because in Japan, they don't like being accused of being racist. Well, one explanation is if you're a typical Japanese person living in an area with no foreigners, they're going to say, I'm not a racist. You're not racist because you never dealt with any other races.
Yeah.
See? They're right in that. What I don't like, they're implying that since I'm Japanese, it's not possible that I could be racist. That's fucking bullshit. Yeah. Anyone could be racist. Believe me. Black people could be racist. Asian people could be racist. Latinos, you know what I mean? The only difference is historically white people have more power. So when they're racist, they could hurt more people. But this bullshit about only white people racist, that is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
That is such a bullshit, you know?
It's the same thing. This is obviously a conversation I had. Patrice and I had with some British people. They were like, they were watching our stand-up and they're like, you guys are obsessed with this. Scotland. They're like, you guys are obsessed with racism.
Yeah.
You get like people in Britain thought we were obsessed with it. And I was trying to defend it because we were both doing it. And then Patrice was like, no, we just have to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because we have all of us living together.
Yeah.
Like, we have black people and white people and we're all, like, we're at a different place. We've had a different history than you. So you got to understand that we're not obsessed about it. That's our life. That's what we do. And it was, but it's true. It's like, You can't say you're not racist if you're the only people there.
Yeah, because like, you never deal with it. And I don't think we give ourselves enough credit because this social experiment we call America is incredibly unique and great because it's kind of like economists when you talk to them. 90 to 95% of economists agree on principal economics. It's only when that 5 or 10% when they don't agree, it makes news. But we only make news in this country whenever there's some horrible racial incident. Yeah. The vast majority of time, people get along.
All the time.
All the time. And if they don't like somebody, they just don't deal with them. Or yep. They don't hang out. You don't like gay people? Don't hang out. You don't like black and Asian people? Don't hang out.
Yeah.
But for this country, it really do a very, very good job. And we don't give enough credit. And I only say that because I go overseas where there is some real serious racism is not even a problem. Like ethnic cleansing and where they're deliberately trying to kill massive people.
Race, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you think racism problem? It's just a joke compared to overseas. People just don't know any better. But
like when you see the stories about like Hotel Rwanda, where the boots,
yeah, genocide in Central Africa,
and it's just like they're killing every. I guess they were killing light skin black people.
Yeah, there's just ethnically different, like Tutsi and the Hutus.
Tutsi and the Hutus, and it was like the trees.
Sounds like a musical band, but anyway. But you know, it's sad because.
The joke probably wouldn't have worked in Hotel Rwanda.
No, I don't think so.
Hey, what's all this about? Is there some
Tutsi sounds like black candy or something. It's, you know.
No. The best would be if. Oh, fuck. What's the joke? All I'm thinking is Dustin Hoffman's Tutsi.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know the joke, but that's all I can think of.
It just. I love living here, and I love my – that's why I got to know Dave because I love Dave's travel show that he did for Vice. I love your travel shows. I highly recommend more Americans to go overseas.
Yeah.
Now, if you never travel overseas, like your wife, she was afraid to do Asian stuff. Okay, just go overseas first. Go England. They speak your language. Go Australia, New Zealand. Once you feel comfortable, go rest of world. Go to Europe. Then after that, you go to – Latin America, Africa. I think it's really important that Americans go overseas.
I agree 100%. And I think that I think that I've grown tremendously as an adult from working with Travel Channel. Like just my perspective, my view of life, my
you're great on
culture.
It.
Oh, thank you very much.
On Joe Rogan's thing, I think I might have been Joe Rogan's thing. It might have been Joey Diaz. One of those guys. I said,
beat it.
I told him, you know, recently Dennis Rodman went to North Korea. I told him this while ago, Bert should go to North Korea and run Ministry of Fun.
Because you,
out of all the comedians, like, you seem so – because a lot of the comedians tend to be shy and they're not comfortable around people. So I'm for sure one of those guys. But you're just a fun guy. Even if you didn't do comedy, you'd have been fun guy no matter what.
Yeah, I think
100% guaranteed you're one of those guys. And you'd be great going to North Korea because that place is anti-fun, anti-funny. It is just like the worst of the worst place, man.
That's a great movie script. It's almost like King Ralph with – do you ever see that with John Goodman?
No.
Because I get stuck in North Korea and I turn him around and it's just – and we can get Dr. Ken to play King Jong-un.
You should pitch that to like Vice, you and Dr. Ken or something. There was a semi-documentary movie called Red Chapel. Two Korean adopted Danish kids. And this guy,
two Korean adopted Danish kids
who don't speak any Korean. They speak only English and Danish with this documentary guy pretend like they're culture exchange. But they went there. They did this comedy show in North Korea and they filmed everything. It's scary because if they got caught on like they're going to make fun of them, they would have gone executed for sure. It's called Red Chapel. I highly recommend it. It's crazy. They literally walked through Red Square with the whole North Korean army, man. So I think you and Dr. Kim, Bobby Lee, and Margaret Cho.
Yeah.
That would be a great some Vice, but not like a joke. Just literally going like a culture exchange. I think that
would
be good.
Yeah. I would love to get up on the bar, rip my shirt off, and start doing shots.
Yes.
You're making me think about a million fucking things.
Yeah.
Now, when you see a guy.
Yeah.
Like when you. Who,
yeah.
And I'm going to say this guy because he's – he's okay. Let's not use him. Well, let's just use him. Steve Byrne's my friend, but yeah. When you see someone like Steve Byrne, who is so
nicest funny.
Guy in the world, but he's like half white, half Asian,
yeah,
and he seems to assimilate super easy.
Yeah,
marries a white chick.
Yeah,
like it's like almost isn't as Asian as you. Does
yeah,
that make sense?
Yes.
Do you see that as like fuck? I wish I could fit in that easily, or do you not even notice it? And you go, he's just a nice guy. Like you, Eddie, David, and Roy seem to have come at least from the outside in. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And Steve seemed to play hockey, like B.
Yeah.
He was born into the inside because he had his last name's Irish.
I don't know what
Steve's hearing this right now, and he's like, "Fuck off, Bert." But he's my friend, so I can talk like
that. I don't know his background because I don't want to say it was easier for him because you never know. Maybe he wasn't accepted by Asian group and white group.
Oh yeah, it wasn't easy. I'm sure it wasn't easy.
It wasn't easy.
In fucking Pittsburgh.
And then it might have been hard for him too. I don't want to say that, but I will say one thing that is really interesting to me. When I hear I see Asian kids who are adopted by white folks,
and
Asian kids who are half and stuff, it doesn't make me laugh when they say they're very proud of your heritage.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you're going to be proud of your heritage, you have to know something about it. I don't know how knowledgeable they are because if they are, I'm very conflicted because there's things about Asian culture I like, but there's things like I really find it like reprehensible and it makes me angry.
Yeah.
I'm very conflicted about it because there's things that I don't like about America, but there's so much more that I love. But I don't want to like put that ugly side aside. You know, I got to accept the whole thing. Like you love your kids, but there's got to be things that annoy you, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to stop loving them, but you don't think they're 100% perfect, you know?
Yeah, right. No, now does Japanese is your first language?
Yes.
And then do you speak Chinese too?
No.
Or Korean too, I mean?
No, I understood it a little bit when I was a kid, but I forgot. And I know when they're cussing at me, I know exactly what they're saying because I get yelled at by my family all the time. But
your family spoke Korean.
My mother's side
obviously
spoke Korean and English, and my father's side in Japan spoke pretty decent Korean, Japanese, and no English.
So now when you come to the country, when did you realize you were funny?
I still don't know. Because I watch you and like how relaxed on stage and stuff, you know, because I get laughed mostly because I do something socially retarded. And I didn't even know I was doing something wrong, and they get mad at me, you know. Like Russell and Jim and Attil think that's the funny thing. But I'm not – I'm very malicious to people that I hate. I'm very malicious and vindictive.
Really?
Yes, for sure.
Are you serious?
Yes.
God, I don't even see that part of your personality.
I'm very vindictive and malicious because I don't want to get too detailed because I talk about this shit over and over again on all the podcasts, but – my dad died in a weird circumstance. I think they made it look like a suicide, but I think my dad was murdered and my stepmother had something to do with it. So 10 years ago this summer, I flew back to Japan. I literally almost beat her to death. That's why I can't go back to Japan. And I assaulted her sister, brother-in-law, and nephew. And she was in hospital for like 2-3 months. I think another minute or so I probably killed her. So I got back. I can't go. I could go back to Japan. I just won't be able to get out. Probably I might get arrested, but I deal with problems like that. I don't want to.
Yeah,
you know. But I talked about it a lot in Rogan and Ari Shaffir's podcast and stuff. So it's been sent to them. But I don't like threatening people because where I grew up, only women do that kind of stuff. That's why Japanese people bomb Pearl Harbor. They didn't say if you don't do this, we're going to bomb. Those old school people just hurt you because that's how they do it. They don't like threaten people.
I'm dying to see that new movie, by the way, called The Emperor.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Where it's all about whether or not the Emperor ordered the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Christian Bale, right?
Yeah. No, is it Christian Bale or Hawke or someone like that? It's someone like that.
Somebody big is an attorney.
Oh no! It's Matthew Fox.
Oh, that's right. He's the attorney defending the emperor. It looks great. I want to see that. It's always funny with my. So for me, Asian guys get angry whenever they see the white guy in the movie always dating the Asian women.
Really?
Because in every movie in America where Asian got dominant, like Jackie Chan or Jet Li, they never get the girl. They never get the white girl. It's yeah. a, you know what I mean? It's always the white guy get the Asian girls or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like Chris Tucker.
Yeah.
And you're right. And Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
Got the everyone.
I don't care because yeah. I don't really give a shit because because Asian women makes me very angry.
Yeah.
So. I don't give a fuck about that, but my friend KFC said, I don't really give a shit, but that's a really funny stereotype. I don't know what it is. Jewish guys, a lot of them marry, if they marry outside of their race, it's Asian women.
Really?
Mark Zuckerberg married a Chinese American girl.
Really?
And I think because Asian mothers are naggers like Jewish moms.
Really? I don't know. I know so little. I never even.
And they're both greedy.
I've never even kissed an Asian chick.
Yeah. Really?
No. Yeah. I didn't have them growing up.
Oh, that's right. Tampa Bay.
Yeah, there was no. Sam Ho had a sister, Rhonda Ho, who that's her name. So I was always fascinated. When I'm on stage and I meet a Chinese woman, and she's like, "Yeah, my name's Jennifer," and I'm like, "There's no way your parents gave you that."
Yeah,
and they're like, "Well, I have a Chinese name, and I got to pick my own."
Yeah,
and you're like, "Shut the fuck up! Why did you choose Jennifer? I guess you want to assimilate."
Yeah,
but Rhonda Ho and Sam Ho, and Rhonda wasn't a looker. She was like, she wore some awful glasses. Poor Rhonda. Rhonda, if you're listening to this and you're like, I remember Bert. I wonder what he's talking about. She's like, me? Fuck you, asshole. It was really hard growing up in the only Asian family in Tampa. But like, I never knew any Asian women my whole life. I knew girls that were kind of maybe a little Asian, but not very. Like, but that's it. And then I never did it. An Asian chick. I never even kissed an Asian chick.
Mm. Oh, going back with Jonathan Branson, Jim Norton's manager. He's the one who opened me up with his very famous and rich, powerful people in Middle East. And my friend Sam Hosseini runs every media company in Afghanistan. So I went last September and I could literally walk around no problem because there's an ethnic group called Hazaras. They look Asian like me.
Yeah.
So if I dress down and put dirt on my face, I look like one of them.
Really?
So I fit it in. But if you walked around, you might get kidnapped. That's the thing. If you're a white guy, you might get kidnapped.
Yeah, that's what you were saying. You were going to vacation in Afghanistan. I was like, what the fuck?
So I went. And the kids were wonderful. Like these kids had so little, but they were offering me candies and stuff when I went to soccer matches and stuff. They're just wonderful people. Unfortunate history and geography. I'm going back because I'm working on a couple projects called OneWomenAYear.org, where we're trying to raise $3 million to send Afghani girls to college and universities. So I'm going back because I have connection with show business. I'm trying to bring famous people, get involved, and do events and raise money and things like that. So I'm going to go back because I do believe no matter how much you might have fucked up when we go overseas, America is the only country with a good intention, and we're trying to help people there. Yeah. And there's a lot of people who like Americans. It's just the bad people trying to fuck it up for everyone. And my friend Saad told me only 25 to 50,000 people are a member of Taliban of a country of 40 million. Basically, 50,000 people are fucking up the whole country.
That's fucking crazy.
And
it's
people,
like the Klan.
Yeah. But they have fucking guns and, you know, ammo and they're fucking enough for everyone. But people are wonderful there. And that's the thing I noticed. Whether I go to Turkey or all over Asia or Europe, and Latin America, people are nice. You just have to spend time in that to quickly judge someone.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid when you try food. Don't be afraid when you try foreign movies. Don't be afraid when you go overseas.
Oh, this show I'm doing now, Trip Flip, has gotten me out of my box. And you are
the great ambassador for the world, Kurt.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, that means a lot to me. That means a lot hearing it from you because I think where's one place you would love to go that you haven't been?
Ooh, right now I would like to go.
I'll tell you my two favorite places in the world right now.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
My two favorite places in the world, Jamaica and Australia.
Oh, I've been to those places.
Oh, I fucking love Jamaica. I love Jamaica like I could move there. And Australia might be the best place I've ever been in my entire life.
Did you go there for comedy?
No, for the TV show.
You definitely have to go for comedy.
I know. I want to go to comedy to do. Have you done the Australian?
I went with Russell Peters in 2006.
God damn. How'd you meet Russell?
I went to Montreal in 2003. And my friend Ty Barnett, who came second place in Last Comic Standing, he said, why don't you come up? I'm hanging out for a week. So, okay. I flew up. And I was in Montreal. I was a little nervous because I heard everybody speak French.
Yeah.
So I walked out of a hotel with it, like hour after landing. I see this brown guy walking out of a hotel room too, and I figure he have to be speaking English. So I start talking to him, and it was Russell, right? So we start talking. I didn't even know he was a comic, right?
Yeah.
But we bonded because as soon as he found out about porn, we started talking about porn.
Oh, yeah,
right?
He dated who's
Sonny Leone.
Sonny Leone.
Oh, biggest star in India right now. One of the biggest stars.
Really?
She's doing more Bollywood stuff now.
Really?
Yeah, she's a huge star. She does – it's not even porn. She's a serious actress in India, Bollywood movie star. And
fuck.
She's beautiful and very friendly. But she's from Orange County.
I wonder if that's what happened to the girl. Other – there's another Asian Indian porn star – that I met with my buddy Cowhead, and she was a mess. But Russell was dating a chick. Me and him and Tom Segura were doing a Pearl Harbor together.
Yeah,
interestingly.
Wow, why do you hurt me? Hurt. Yeah,
we're doing it. We are at our wives and our chicks there, and yeah. Russell's brother's there, Clayton.
Yeah,
and we're all having drinks. And I go, hey, have you guys? And of course, this is so me. This is what white people do. This is a white move right now. Not every white guy, but just drunk white guys.
Yeah.
Whenever you're hanging out with anyone of any different culture, you like to think of all the things you know about that culture.
Yeah.
And then throw them at them and go, have you ever seen this? Did you ever see this?
Yeah.
Hey, have you ever seen the movie Belly? Do you like Method Man?
Yeah.
Do you know that DMX's real name's Earl? Oh my God. So I'm doing that to Russell. I'm like, have you ever seen that porn star that's Indian? And she did one of the Vivid things with us.
Right.
She did one of the Vivid comedy nights, and she was gorgeous.
Yes.
Gorgeous. And Russell starts like going, yeah. And Clayton, his eyes shut. He's laughing so hard.
Yeah.
And I go, what? And I go, have you seen her? Do you know who I'm talking about? I don't know her name. Her name is, and Russell's girlfriend goes, Sunny. And I go, yo, you know her. You know who she is? And Russell goes, I dated her. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. She was my ex. She's my ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
Like, and his girlfriend, Kimberly, got up and walked out.
Oh, no.
And fucking Tom Segura and I were like, roll. So, yeah, she's – so then that's how you met Russell?
From Montreal.
Russell's
yeah.
one of the nicest fucking dudes.
Nicest
too.
Guy. I would have been in trouble last year if he didn't help me. He's been helping me all these years. Like he bought my car, and when it breaks down, he pays for it. When I had a root canal problem, he paid for it.
Really?
He doesn't even ask. Like, what's the problem? Everything's okay. He just asks me if there's a problem, and he take care of everything.
He's a fucking great guy.
I mean, he does all this kind of. When I first hanging out with him, we were at the gas station. This black guy asked him, hey, man, I'm in trouble. Can you help me? And he gave him $50 to him.
Yeah.
And I thought, this guy is a fucking communist. I mean, why do you give money away? Like, that made me angry. Why would you waste money on somebody you don't know? Why don't you waste it on your friend or whatever? Yeah. But he's generous like that.
He's very generous.
There's so many other things that people don't know where he go out of his way to, like, somebody got hurt, he'll take care of it. Somebody died, you know. Because he remember what it is to not to have money.
Patrice and I met him together in Scotland.
Yeah.
And he was hustling, man. He was every fucking day. He was out on the streets handing out postcards and giving his card and trying to get people to his shows. And his show got successful. And it was like he was you know, I don't think I've ever paid for a meal around him.
No, he won't let you.
I don't think I've ever paid for a fucking thing around him. And he's the kind of guy that gets presents for people.
Yeah.
He's like, you know who else is like that? The people are like, Pablo Francisco's like that.
Yeah.
He buys presents for people all the time.
Dave Attell always. You know, he's been like stressed out last couple like weeks, I think, because he's trying to help Ron Jeremy. He had a heart attack, you know.
Oh, really?
Dave's like that too. Just very generous and... Dave's one of those guys that he cares too much about other people's feelings. He should start thinking about his happiness too.
You know,
he just care about everyone. You know,
there's like it's always fun. Get out of here, Chris. It's always fun when you see like when you have a good, funny Attell story.
Yeah.
But my favorite Attell stories are like my favorite Attell story, and this is because it makes me go, oh, I need to reassess parts of my personality.
Yeah.
And understand what maybe a second out of my time means to people. I was doing Gotham and I was just, you know, for the weekend, and I get off stage and whoever I was working with, I forget who I was working with, was like, dude, Attell was here.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah, Attell was here. He was watching you. I go, is he still here? And they're like, no, he left. And I was like, fuck. And in my head, you then start, you know, you get into a little conversation in your head about whatever. And so I go back to the sound booth. And the guy running the sound booth goes, Attell was here. And I said, yeah, I know, I heard. And he goes, he said, you know, he was back here, he was laughing a bunch of jokes, and he told me to tell you that he had to take off, but he wanted to say hi. And, and that that you were really funny. And I was like, motherfucker, you know, like he knows. Maybe he doesn't know how relevant or how important he is to the average comic. But like the fact that he told the sound guy to tell me that he thought I was that it was good. He wanted to come by and say hi, but he had to run out to another spot. Like that second that he took meant the world. And I was like fucking hung my hat on it. And I was I know Dave. Like he's the greatest guy in the fucking world.
He's the greatest guy, and isn't it interesting? He is so nice, and his jokes are like poetry. It's great. Like, you know, I just marvel his ability to write well. He's got to be one of the greatest joke writer, but he's so hard on himself because you know how shitty I feel? Like, those jokes, they didn't like my jokes. I bombed, whatever. And he thinks his jokes are terrible. Like, oh, my God. I wish I could even write 100th% of what his stuff he writes, you know?
Me too. I wish.
His standards are so high.
Yeah, but and that's what makes – that's what's – you know, that's like – I remember watching dudes – I don't know who said this, but it was one of the better comics. I remember a dude coming off stage in New York, got off stage, and he was like, man, I fucking lit that room on fire, and then walked away. And I remember – I forget who it was. It was one of Attell, Norton, one of those dudes goes, wonder what fight he was watching.
Yeah.
Because they didn't – they if that had been them, they would have been like, I fucking bombed. But it's the mark of a good comic is like I fucking destroyed versus a great comic goes, I could do better. There's like when you hold yourself to a higher standard, I think you actually come closer to meeting that standard. Yeah. Whereas if you come off and you're like, there's a lot of dudes that are like, that was magic, and you're like, it was kind of hacky.
I mean, if you play in NBA, you're a great professional player. You beat millions of people around, and just the fact that you made it in. It's a lot. You're great, but even in that group, you have those four or five guys in top.
Yeah,
that you know Kevin Durant and all those other great players, right? LeBron James and people like that. They're above and beyond even those elite group. So I think we could both agree, like Attell, Louis C.K., Stanhope, and
Chris Rock, Norton, all those
guys. They're just I look up to them, and not only are they not a snob, but they're just down-to-earth guy, and they're a comic. And, like, you know, especially somebody like Rock, like, he's a movie star, and he does this, but at the Comedy Center, which is a very elite club in New York City, you could literally talk to him. He's really nice.
I remember him hanging out at the Comedy Store one time. I was back in the green room, and it was like, and the room was, I swear to God, it's Roseanne Barr, Louis Anderson, Andrew Dice Clay, Chris Rock, myself, like a bunch of younger comics, and because you have that moniker of stand-up comedian, where you started in the trenches, at open mics, just like he did, broke through the doors, passed clubs, started featuring, started headlining, got on TV, whatever your path is, but the fact that you started in stand-up, he respects that, and you were then his equal, and that is a fucking big. Like, that's, I don't know.
When I was in Comedy Magic Club one time, Gary Shandling was there, and I was shocked. I'm like, I'm a big fan of his, you know?
Me too.
And I was awed, but for some reason, we ended up talking about boxing. I didn't know he was such a fan of boxing, and he practiced boxing, too. He trains and everything.
Really?
Yeah. And we were talking about Manny Pacquiao, and it was so fun to talk to him because at the end of the day, he even asked a couple of us in the room, like, you know, I did that joke. What do you guys think? What do you think? It was, like, really nice. Like, who the fuck are we? We're just a bunch of nobody. And for him to talk to us in such a respectful way, he was funny and delightful and charming. And, like, it was – yeah, I love meeting people like that, you know, that they're so amazing and good people.
The one of the things – I don't know what time is it. I have to go to my sister's for dinner. Okay, I got time. I'll get you out of here soon. But one of the things I'm dying to talk to you about that is the hardest I've ever laughed was you on Tom Segura's podcast.
Oh, really?
The funniest. I've never laughed so hard. I can tell you where I was. I was in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay.
And I was on a treadmill.
Yeah.
And you told the story of you eating Joey's banana bread.
Oh, yeah.
I've never laughed so hard, and I'm not going to ask you to recreate it. I will simply say, if you're listening to this and you have not heard that story, go to that podcast. It was a great fucking podcast. And I was like, I've never laughed so hard, because I've been there. I've been, like, as a younger guy, I've definitely taken marijuana and lost my mind. But hearing that story, I empathize with you so hard But it was such a funny story. Do you talk about that on stage at all?
A little bit here and there. Now that people are asking me about it, but yeah. it's not because I was like a goody two shoes, not into yeah. drugs. I was illegal alien for a long time, so I was so paranoid. If I get in trouble legally, they'll kick me out of the country.
Yeah.
And my family lied to me. They said, if I get caught by INS, they're not going to send me back to Japan. They're going to send you to North Korea because you're a horrible, horrible person. Horrible person. They're not going to take
what
it back.
What kind of parenting is that? You can't say that to a child?
They said all kinds of crazy shit when I was a kid. Like my aunt said, like, if you don't shut up, I'm going to cut your nuts off. And I think I was like 6 or 7. That really, like, when I heard, like, it really expanded my imagination to a place I didn't want to go, like, I didn't even know that's even possible even to do.
Yeah.
And, like, I got scared, you know, like, because I think that, like, a little before I heard that, I got my dick cut in a zipper. So, yeah. That was horrific. It is. My aunt said, because I was behaving so bad,
yeah.
She said she's going to cut my, in Japanese, to call balls, it's called kintama. Yeah. It literally means golden balls, right? So, like, she's going to cut my golden balls. I'm like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? Yeah, because my hometown in Osaka is considered, like, the Brooklyn of Japan.
Yeah.
People are so rude. They don't even say hello to you. They say mokare maka, which literally means, did you make any money? They don't give a shit if you're doing well. They just want to know. They just want to know if you made money. If you didn't, get out of here.
That's fucking awesome.
If you go to Japan, you should go to Osaka because Tokyo is such a hacky place to go.
Yeah.
But Osaka is home of Yakuza, great food, and all the great comedians come from Osaka.
No, wait, have you ever thought, like, because you write jokes in English, but that's not your first language. Japanese, do you dream in English or do you dream in Japanese?
Half and half at times.
Now, do you think if you got on stage and spoke Japanese?
No way, it won't work.
Why?
It won't work because the stuff that I find humorous, they will be just horrified by it.
Really?
Yeah, because I did like nuclear bomb jokes and tsunami jokes and stuff that they don't want to talk taboo subject matters at all.
Yeah,
that's why I think America and West is far superior than East because they will go and find truth even if it made everyone uncomfortable.
That's one of the things that I find beautiful about stand up and beautiful and now it's like, now it's funny because people are getting in trouble for taking chances in stand up. And I'm like,
I hate it when Natasha got in trouble for that joke. It's bullshit.
Especially it's bullshit because he was taking
it out of context. Did he really mean it? No.
Yeah. He definitely didn't mean it. And he's actually said worse jokes that are even funnier.
Yeah.
But like, you know, what bothers me so much is that it's, you know, the premise of stand-up comedy, the entire concept, the base concept is a human taking a chance to see if you will laugh.
Yes.
That is the premise.
Yeah.
If you take away that chance, then you'll just see humans doing things that you know you'll laugh at.
Yeah.
And that's not comedy anymore. That's just – it's like if I just walk up and I just – it would be a bunch of people smacking pies in their face.
Yeah.
And then everyone would go – and then it would stop being funny. So then there would be no comedy. If you don't allow people to take chances, there will be no comedy. The biggest laughs I've ever gotten are when you say it and you didn't realize you said it and it's out there.
And it's true.
And it's true and people can't believe you said it and it's fucking wild. I remember I was in – we were in the – I want to say it was maybe the Jameson Comedy Tour in Chicago and there was a black dude on stage – a black dude in the audience. Romeo, fuck! It was like Romeo Prince.
Is he a comic?
No, he's a photographer. He takes pictures.
Okay,
and he was wearing a gold dashiki.
Yeah,
with gold pants.
Yeah,
and gold shoes.
Yeah,
gold. He's gold, and there's purple lace in it.
Okay,
he's gold dashiki with purple lace. Right? Gold pants with purple lace, and gold slippers like with purple.
Isn't it funny that they could pull that off? But when you and I dress, we look ridiculous.
Black men have changed fashion entirely. I now am very conscious if my shirt matches my shoes, if I'm wearing sneakers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't even just throw on sneakers and throw on a shirt. Like if I throw on sneakers, I'm like, well, they're navy blue sneakers. I need to wear something that complements my – black men have changed the way we dress.
Yeah.
It is – black culture is overwhelming when it comes to style and fashion and almost enjoyment. Anything fun.
Yeah.
You almost drive everything. I have fun. I love hip hop and fucking the way I, the kind of car I drive.
I think I was prejudiced against them, that dressing down. Like, I don't understand, why would you dress like that? But I learned through Russell Peters, and yeah, there's no one that I know of know more about black culture than Russell. And he probably know more than average black person. Yeah. He loves black people, you know? Yeah. And the more I hang out with him, like, more I get to know the black culture. Like, actually, that makes sense, the way they dress. It's really cool that they are able to do that. I just didn't understand it, you know? So I like putting me in a very uncomfortable situation, kind of learn, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, like you were saying, where I want to go. Right now, I like to go places that traditionally people consider horrible. I'm planning to go Pakistan with my friend next year. I would like to go North Korea. It's just,
wait, can you go to North Korea?
Yeah.
No, I mean like people.
You can. You just, it costs money and a lot of, you got to go, a lot of headache, a lot of paperwork. But yes, you can. You can go there.
I would love to go to North Korea.
Yeah. And you'll be great. I think that would be hilarious for you to go, like maybe even your cultural exchange.
Yeah.
The joke diplomacy. The premise is you go and teach American humor. And that'd be funny to see you trying to teach comedy. First of all, you can't. But the fact that you even go to North Korea and teach them, that'd be hilarious.
Yeah.
And I would love to see you go, because...
Do you know how funny it would be to go send me to North Korea to try to teach comedy and just me doing funny shit and them not laughing at all?
Yeah.
Like, not even remotely.
But eventually, you learn how humor worked then, and they win them over. That's something I would love.
That's what happened with me in Russia. When I went to Russia, is our sense of humors were night and day.
Funny thing you say that. That's one thing that I did want to talk to you. I took Russian studies in college, too.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Did you ever go abroad?
I wanted to go, but I had issue with my citizenship at the time, but I really, really want to go. And when you talk about the whole machine thing, it's hilarious.
I mean, I took Russian 1, 2, 3, and 4. I have a minor in Russian.
Yeah,
I barely graduated college, so I don't know what I have really. But I had a minor. I went to Russia, and they were like, "You're gonna have a minor. You can never take another fucking class because you don't know a lick of the language."
Yeah.
Then I learned language through hanging out with those dudes.
Yeah.
I learned the language, and I learned how to order. By the time I left Russia, I could not. I'm not saying I was fluent, but I could hang out with these dudes and chit chat with them and fucking talk about stuff. And I used to always try to incorporate American idioms into my language with them. So I'd always say, "Tis nice to you, tis nice to you," and they'd be like, "Что?" And I go, "Tis nice to you." You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I'd say that with everything. I go, "Man," I go, "Let's go." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I go, "Пойдем." Tis nice to you, and they're like, "What the fuck?" Like, I don't know. Yes, I know. You just said it. I know what you're saying.
You got to go back with the travel thing, man. I'd like to see you in Russia, North Korea, Afghanistan.
Like, that's not a bad idea. Just go around and go back. Go to the places that are probably the least comical and try to inject a bit of like American lightheartedness.
I did work for like 4 or 5 months on an idea for a show where someone like you would go to each country and meet up with their different comedians. And I did a lot of research on like all the different comedians throughout the world. And I'm kind of knowledgeable now. But the one of the show idea was, there was this Al-Qaeda member who got captured by the police in the UK. They sent him to prison. And they have this program where they teach you to learn to read, trade school stuff. He was taking stand-up comedy class in prison, this Al-Qaeda guy, right? When the news got spread out, they got embarrassed. They stopped doing it. I thought, if there is a person who needs to take comedy class, it's somebody who used to be a member of a terrorist organization.
Oh, my God. If you could get terrorists into an open mic program.
Yeah.
And just get them to loosen up a little bit, like...
And then laugh at themselves and see all the absurdity in life, the world would be a better place, you know?
Yeah. Comedy is massively needed. Like, in my opinion, it is the one thing that, especially when you can connect to, like, and you reach the dude that you didn't.
And they listen to you.
Yeah.
When I work all over Scandinavia, you know, I've already got emails from people saying they listen to podcasts. They love it. Joe Rogan's probably the number one podcast in Scandinavia, but it's great. They love it because they become our lives, or your lives and Joe's life become part of their life, you know, and stand-up comedy is slowly becoming big in Scandinavia. They've always had comedy, but not necessarily stand-up comedy, which is distinctly American form.
Jasper Parnevik's dad was the number one stand-up comedian. Do you know Jasper Parnevik?
No, I'm not.
He's a professional golfer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Jesper Parnovic's dad. And I only know that because my dad's into golf, and so a way for us to connect was Jesper Parnovic's dad was a comedian. So it's like, you have a valid job to me. Yeah.
You should go August, Zulu Comedy Festival in Denmark. They listen to English comedians.
I just did stand up in – wait, I'm so culture. I'm so geographically – stunted.
Yeah.
Denmark is
part of Scandinavia.
Scandinavia. And that's,
it's north
and
of
that's
Germany.
The balls, right?
Yeah. And Copenhagen is their capital. Beautiful city, beautiful people. And out of all the Scandinavia, the Danes, you could send some horrible shit. Me and Jason Riles, another comedian friend of mine from Canada, we do some horrible material. And, you know, I have feelings too. You know, I do some, for sure, out of Asian Americans, I'm the most edgy comic. And when I say horrible stuff, people get upset. Whatever, but it doesn't bother me sometimes. But in Scandinavia, they embrace me like crazy.
Really?
Yeah. You could send some horrible, horrible shit. They'll go with you. Because at the end of the day, they know you're just joking.
Do they speak English?
Oh, better than us.
Really?
Yeah, that's why.
you and who? Because I speak it pretty good.
Okay, but they're better than me. But Bert, they will love you because they've seen your shows over there and in podcasts they're listening to it. You know,
if I got
to
do over there, I'd go over there in a fucking heartbeat.
In Australia, New Zealand,
Australia, I'd love to do stand up in because I think my sense of humor is very close.
Very
to the
close.
Australian sense of humor. I went and did the Comedy Store in London.
Yeah,
and I will say, and I just said earlier that people say that think they killed, did not kill. I only know I killed. I have it on the documentary that I shot because my documentary was there. But I only know I killed because the comics that were in the green room were fucking with me, trying to get me to bomb, and like and everyone was very. Like it's regular stand up comedy club behavior. It's like the set. No one knows who you are. Your name's not on the list. No one knows.
But they understand funny.
Yeah, and so they don't know you, and they're giving you a hard time. I don't know what you're talking about. Talk to the DJ. Talk to the bodyguard. Talk to this. So finally, they go, okay, we know who you are. Go to the green room, and then the comics in the green room are like, listen, mate, this is the number one club in the world. I'll tell you all right now. I'm doing a horrible accent, whatever accent I'm doing. But like, they're like, listen, you follow your time. That's number one, okay? Number one. This crowd's rough. They're gonna eat you up for lunch.
Yeah.
This isn't America, mate. This isn't America. This is London. You better respect us. You follow your time.
Yeah.
You know, what? And I was like, I'm actually a comedian. These dudes, maybe they are. I don't know any of those guys.
Yeah.
But like, maybe they're big in London.
Yeah.
They're not. Their behavior isn't.
Yeah.
I can tell you right now from doing stand up comedy professionally, their behavior wasn't.
Yeah.
Because they were trying to be like. I made a joke. So I'm a comedian, and I will still be a comedian in that moment. And I was like, do you think this is like a pro Bush room or like an anti Bush?
Right.
And then they're like, oh my, if you're thinking about that, you're fucked. And I was like, I'm joking with you, you dumb fucks.
Yeah.
So I go outside, I go up on stage, and literally 7 minutes to the light, 7 minutes. Destroy that fucking room.
Right.
Literally lit it on fire.
Not surprised.
Yeah, I'm like, fucking listen, motherfuckers. I've been doing this for 15 years.
Yeah.
You want me to do 7 minutes? I got that. And not only do I have that, but I'm going to throw in jokes that I don't normally tell on stage, but I know murder because I want to do well.
Yeah.
Like, I'll do my fucking carrot cucumber joke, bam, 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 come off stage, and all the dudes in the green room are literally jaws agape, just like.
Yeah.
And then one guy goes, I guess you've done this before.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I do this for a fucking living. And he goes, mate, you just ripped that room. Nobody rips this room.
Yeah.
Like, you got to come back. And I was like, I'm fucking out of here, bitches. I was like, I'll come back when I have like an offer.
Yeah.
When I'm actually like when Birth Conqueror's been playing there. But like, I'm not going to come back and do open mics in London.
No.
No, I need, I'm only work for money. But that was a great fucking room.
It's a great room.
God damn, that was a great fucking room. I could have that room in the country, in our country.
Yeah.
And I'd be there every single night. It was packed.
And London is like.
And the crowds were fucking
awesome.
Dude tries to stand up and say a thing. And of course, you know, it's L.A. style. Like, I started in New York. Same thing. Fucking light the guy. Shut the guy down.
Yeah.
And the fucking room loves it. You're like, God damn.
Yeah.
Man, like, I haven't been. Nowadays, it's like guy heckles and they're like, well, stay within the parameters.
Yeah.
Of being fair. Or I'll blog about it. Fucking London was like. It was straight up Thunderdome.
They don't give a shit about your credit. They don't care what you did. They just want to laugh.
Just make me laugh, motherfucker. I loved that club, and I would definitely go back.
But what's with the rudeness, you know? It's just so – it's really weird because I remember one of the first time I went to Comedy Store with Russell.
Yeah.
They didn't know who the fuck he was, and they didn't even let him walk in from the back door in the comedy store. And, like, I was thinking, like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
Yeah.
Russell just left it off, and we just left. But
well, Russell's – my ego was fucking with me because I was like, man, I feel like I'm getting treated like shit. I've been treated like shit at a comedy club.
Yeah.
In, you know, maybe, like, 7 years, like, where someone didn't know who I was when I walked in. And so, but that's just from doing it for a living.
Yeah.
In America, I go to the clubs that I work, and I, you know, so I'm not saying that I'm like, I walk into a comedy club and everyone's like, oh my God, it's Bert.
Yeah.
But definitely, I was like, there's a little bit of like respect where you're like, a comedian, you know, and they're like, oh, okay. The only person that gave me shit like that was that guy, Tommy from the Comedy Store in LA. I was like,
that's weird.
Yeah. I'm fucking never.
But you know, like guys like Attil, Russell, Norton, Patrice, Louis C.K., Joe Rogan, Stanhope, they would never behave like, you know who the fuck I am? Like,
yeah, no one would.
No one would. Like, why?
Yeah.
Because we're comedians are tough guys? Like, yeah.
Like no one would ever roll in and be like, listen, motherfucker, let me tell you who I am. That's not who they are. Most of us will walk in, and then if that's the vibe you're getting and it's unhealthy, we're like, I'm out of here. This is fucking bad. I'll just bounce and then apologize for missing my spot tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but London, Australia, here's...
They have a comedy store in Sydney too, but they're all different by different people.
But Sydney Comedy Store, I was down there. This is how great fucking Australia is. I was down there and I mentioned on Twitter that I was gonna come by the Sydney Comedy Store and do a spot.
Yeah.
And like all the Death Squad Australia guys were like,
yes.
Like, fuck yeah, bitch. It's on. We're driving in. And then the Sydney Comedy Store called me.
Yeah.
And they're like, listen, anytime you wanna come in, let us know. We'll put you up. Whatever you want to do, you know, like they were cool as shit. And then it turns out that I guess their shows are run very differently. And it's like Thursday, they only do shows Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Yeah.
And like, and I was leaving to go to Cairns on Thursday morning. So
for Film Festival?
No, Cairns is in up by the Great Barrier Reef. It's spelled Cairns.
Oh, okay.
But
never mind.
It's Cairns. Mm-hmm. So, we're going to the Great Barrier Reef. But, man, I'll go back there in a heartbeat. Those people were so fucking cool at the Comedy Store there. And the people in London were cool after I did well. Like, but you know what? The other thing is I was being like, what's it called when you play devil's advocate? I was playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
I was like, I wonder how many times they have American comics come in.
Yeah.
Americans roll in and be like, I'm pretty famous in America.
Yeah.
Like, can just blow smoke up their ass and then suck a dick. So I was like,
I didn't think about that. You're right.
They have to protect themselves. So I'm sure every American rolls in. Like, I'm pretty big in the States and they must get a buttload of fucking
bullshit
talent.
But going back to Death Squad, think of a Joe and Brian Redband, you know, because. I did a couple of their things, and like their fans are so nice, you know. Like
it's the coolest community of people.
I don't know why it's called Death Squad. But.
It's called Death Squad because Opie from Opie and Anthony named it.
Is that how it started?
Joe rolled into Opie and Anthony, and he used to roll with like a fucking posse of like I wasn't there, so I don't know.
I didn't know that.
Like nine dudes, and they were all like MMA fighters, but MMA hadn't like blown up the way it is today.
Yeah,
and so like. They were just, you know, hanging out, and everyone's in like fucking, you know, probably tap out gear, and you know, and they're all fucking Brazilian jiu-jitsu artists, and Opie was like, look at Joe just rolled in with the Death Squad, and so then they kept it as a joke, like making fun of it, like hey, what do you, and then they started calling themselves Death Squad, and then
I didn't know that,
but it's a beautiful community, like it really is. They're protective, they take care of you. They're a great group of dudes who all are like-minded. Everyone's cool. There's no douchebags.
No.
What number one rule of Death Squad? Don't be cunty.
Yeah.
Like, and so
But they're everywhere. Like I'm going to Austin for South by Southwest next weekend.
Yeah.
There's Death Squad Austin. Like already tweeted back to me. There's Death Squad Phoenix. You know.
Yeah.
Death Squad.
Death
New
Squad
York
Harlem's my favorite. I asked for Death Squad Key West because I was in Key West. I go, is there a Death Squad Key West? Fucking 2 seconds later, Death Squad Key West.
Jesus.
Actually, there's no Death Squad Key West. But yeah, I love it. And then they come to your shows and they hang out. And it's, you know, it's, the funnest thing is I was in Scotland and I was doing Trip
Edinburgh?
Flip in Scotland. Mm-hmm. No, doing Trip Flip.
Okay.
And I got a tweet, oh my God, Derek Skilling, I think is his name. But oh my God, Burton, Scotland, what are the odds we could party with a machine? And then I wrote back, very high. The odds are very high.
Yeah.
I'll tell you where I am. Come get me a, come buy me a beer and we'll hang out.
Yeah.
So they, they're like, shut up. So then they all, like, four dudes, like, kind of congregate and figure it out. And they're like, I go, this is where I'll be this day. Come down.
Yeah.
And I'll buy the beers. You don't even have to buy me the beers. So they show up. What's the craziest thing is, you know, they're, hypothetically speaking, you could assume that because someone's a fan of either mine, Joe's, Brian's, Duh, whatever, and yours, any one of us, that there would be this fan talent relationship. But there's not, because I actually listen to the same podcast they listen to.
Yeah.
So we just start bullshitting about podcasts. I go, who did he have on his podcast? And they were like, that week it was Bobcat Goldthwait. And I went, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, what do they talk about? And because I hadn't listened to it. And they're like, oh, it's good. Have you not? And then we're like, and that was the same right after Joey had said it to the blue cheese or go fuck your mother.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they were like, have you heard Joey yet? And I was like, no. And they're like, you got to listen to Joey's. And so we just gossiped. We sat over a beer for like an hour and a half and just gossiped about the podcast.
I love your first podcast when you Dad was talking to Joey to Coco Diaz.
Oh, God.
That's such an odd combo.
Oh, it was so funny because they were hanging out. Like, we were having a party here and they were hanging out the whole time. And I had all this podcasting equipment.
Yeah.
And Tommy was like, Buns was like, Bert, just fucking let's get him in the man cave and we'll do a podcast with him. And so I was like, all right. So I go, Dad, come on in. Joey, come on in. So I turn on all the mics.
Right.
And I was like, fucking gold. And my dad was drinking. Joey was eating edibles. And the fucking two of them.
Yeah.
Listen, what do you want to be like a, what I forget, what do you, you want to be like a Puerto Rican or like have your balls licked by your neighbor? I forget what his Joey's lines are. Joey's fucking one of the most fascinating, awesome dudes in the world.
I could see them do like a radio show like every day. Your dad.
He's coming back out. He's coming back out in March.
He lives in Florida too.
He lives in Florida, so I'm going to have Joey. Joey and my dad again.
Yeah, it's really funny.
Yeah, it's great. And I had Joey the other day with Adam Richman from Man vs. Food.
Oh, yeah.
And they were fucking great because Joey's just got one of these things where he listens to people. He connects with people really easy. He lost his dad at a young age. So I think, you know, I think and his mom at a young age as well.
Yeah.
And I think that there are certain type of people who've gone through tragedy at a young age and it kind of humbles you and levels you. And my dad's that kind of guy. And Adam is also not that.
He cares about his friends and like he's always act. He's not that much older than me, but he's always act like an older brother.
He acts like an older brother to me too. I was going to therapy when we first started hanging out.
Yeah.
And he was like, fuck that shit, cocksucker.
Yeah.
Hang out with me every day, we'll talk. And so I stopped going to therapy and just started talking to Joey.
And I'm glad he's got a kid now.
Yeah. So it's been I think it's been really good for him. I think so. Fuck, I guess I gotta go to my sister's house. I wanna do this again, man. Are you
I'm in town all the time.
Are you really?
I would love to have you do mine.
I'd love to. The does DVD ASA stand for
Double Badge, Double Anal, Sensitive Artist? But DVD stand for David. And ASA for Asa.
Yeah.
We do that every Tuesday, two episodes.
And you do Yoshi.
Yoshi didn't. I did that one too, and it's just been fun. I really like it because I get tweets and like Facebook emails and things like that from people from all over the world, and not going in detail about what I did to my stepmother because of my father's death.
Yeah.
I was always a little afraid to talk about that, but I started kind of opening up last couple of years. But what I was shocking to me, how many people where they lost one of their parents to their stepmothers, so something horrible happened to them, and they didn't know anybody to talk to. I think I hit a nerve or something because if you're a decent person, if you work within the law, sometimes bad people get away, and for them to do anything back at them, they're going to get in trouble for it. You know, it's a very unfortunate situation, but I give some of those people a bit of a relief because I can't go back to Japan because I beat the shit out of my stepmother. I'm over here. I fled the country. You know, most people can't do that. You know, you can't beat up somebody who hurt your parent, leave the United States. You know, most people don't really have that luxury. So, but yeah, that I was really surprised doing it on Joe Rogan's podcast and they were telling me their personal stories,
you
know.
That's crazy when you connect with people like that. I had one connection. I talked about this before, but when someone, you know, I think, I forget who, me and Pete Corielli were talking about.
Very funny guy.
God, I love fucking Pete. I love Pete.
He's in New York, right?
He's moved back. I think he's moving back now.
Oh, okay.
He's still here.
Very funny.
He's great. Him and Sebastian both. I had them both on. And I was talking about being broke as a parent.
Yeah.
And what it's like, what that feeling's like, and how, it causes the most stress in your spouse
because yeah.
they're like, is this it? Is this what I married into? Yeah. Like I bought here and that. And so someone reached out to me, a guy named Craig, and was like, I know exactly his website. Oh shit. Forget was fucking, I should really take 2 seconds.
Yeah. Let's do that.
His thing, because he's a nice guy. And
people really go out of their way to help us, you know, and it's just shocking.
It's a beautiful community we got fucking ingratiated into because of Rogan and Red Band and I, you're did you set up Joe with Eddie Wong?
No, I think that was mostly through his brother, but I know Eddie and probably Dave, knowing Dave probably helped too.
It was through Eddie's brother, you think?
I think so, but Eddie also knew David Cho, I think, and I'm sure we
Does
all...
Does Joe know David Cho?
Oh, yeah, because we did the podcast on Joe Rogan's, like, episode 317 or something. Me and David Cho did it.
I'm listening to that. I'm going to go listen to that right now. Okay, hang on 1 second. Craig Heimbuck is his name, and he said, I drove some traffic to his site. His site is Craig, C-R-A-I-G... HEIMBUCH.com. And there's an article he did about me that was really fucking touching. He did an article on me when I did like season 2 of Earth Conqueror, and he seemed to catch me.
Yeah.
He seemed to get my personality really. I was like, fuck yeah, yeah, you got me, brother. But his Twitter is CHEIMBUCH. But he's a good dude. But I don't know how the fuck we started talking about him.
No, it's people like that who ended up helping you when you're in trouble, yeah. you know. And even with my podcast, this guy, he doesn't want me to say his name, but he's from Hawaii. He sent me money and like I was able to do it because I've been unemployed for years. So it was very nice of these people to help us.
George is going to come in.
Wow, she could do a commercial.
She's a... Okay. Come on in. Come on in. So...
Hi.
Did you meet Yoshi? You met him when he walked in, I think. Do you have any questions you want to ask him? Hang on. Ready? I'm going to test her.
Yeah.
Georgia is actually really good at deciding what kind of Asian people are.
Okay.
So, Georgia, do you think Yoshi is Korean or Chinese? Here, into the mic.
What do you think?
Pick one. What do you think? Korean or Chinese?
Korean.
Wow.
She's good.
She's smart.
She's good. No, she went to school. All of her friends, majority of her friends when she was growing up were Korean. And hello. Get out of here, you two. I guess this means we're done with the podcast, Yoshi. They've rolled in. Let's do this again, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you cool with me bringing, like, because sometimes I like to invite people
yeah.
and have a bunch of people over here?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you're cool with that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Let's do that.
I definitely want to do what maybe with your friend Tom and maybe his mom or something. I'll be so fascinated. Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
I'll be fascinated
by
that.
I wish I wasn't going out of town right now because I'm leave tomorrow for Puerto Rico. But I'll post this. I'm gonna do two this week. Hey, babe. This is Yoshi.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So, and this is Pris. Get Pris out, babe. She's gonna jump up on him. So we're wrapping up right now, babe. So, yeah, so we'll do that. I'm going to have Tom and his mom come over, Leanne, and Yoshi's going to be here because he's that'll be great. That'll be fucking awesome. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Yoshi Denton and DVD ASA, and check out Asa Kira's website, and also our friend Eddie, Fresh Out of Boat, which is a New York Times.
I would love to have him on the podcast, but I don't think there's any questions I have that Joe didn't ask him.
No, you should have him. And the book is number one, like New York Times bestseller, and on Vice.com, Fresh Out of Boat.
Yep.
Travel show.
Eddie Huang is his name.
Yes.
Eddie Wong.
And David Cho, Asakura, and me.
I'm telling you, man, this is my all Asian episode. We're learning. We're taking it to the next level, Yoshi. I appreciate you coming out, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. This really was fun.
I'm going to play this not this coming week, but the next week.
Okay.
Do you have any dates that you want to plug, or are you going to be in Afghanistan?
No. I'll be just working around the town. All right.
So check out all the sites. Yoshi, how do you say thank you?
Japanese. Arigato.
This episode was brought to you by The Machine.